Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We are just here once again talking about the game we love and that you love. I'm Tim in the British and Irish Lions stash and some very short shorts. That's Phil.
Hello, Tim. These are my Bayonne Bomber shorts.
Lovely. And in an NYPD t-shirt that you bought on a recent trip to America on a rugby tour, Sale Sharks' biggest fan, Jonathan Beardmore.
Hello, Timothy.
How are you doing, gents? You all right?
Yes, I'm very well, actually.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you for holding on to me. I was enjoying the wonders of the M5 and M6.
But also the wonders of Bath, which is a wonderful city.
It is a wonderful place.
I can't get rid of you at the moment, Tim. You were on BT Sport when I was watching Bath, Gloucester. I've then driven here and while you were driving on the motorway, you were also on Virgin Radio.
How did you do it, Tim?
And now you're here in person.
How did you do a Virgin Radio show live and be in your car?
Well, technically, I'm still on Virgin Radio for another 45 minutes as we talk.
Amazing.
So if the podcast gets boring on Facebook Live, then just go and listen to the end of that show, because that's amazing as well. But you're in for a treat. And thank you for, if you're watching on Facebook Live, listening on Acast or on the Apple Podcast app or anywhere else you can get a podcast, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And leave your reviews on the Apple Podcast Store as well. That really helps us. But we've got so much to talk about this week. Like, the international squads were announced and that's thrown up loads of talking points. There's a week of Avicii and Pro 14 rugby. We have got some international rugby as well that's been happening. And there's been some other shenanigans that have been going on off the field and on Twitter that actually resulted in one of the biggest rugby stories of the weekend, which started right here with Egg Chasers. We will definitely be getting onto that.
Yes, we will be.
Right. Let's start with the international squads, though.
Yeah, okay. Let's do that.
So Eddie Jones named his England EPS.
Yep.
I always have to remember not to say EPS squad.
Yes, like pin number.
Yeah. England Elite Performance Squad.
Yeah, ATM machine.
Watergate.
So, any surprises or any glaring omissions for you, or people that you, that you didn't feel should have been axed, that got axed, or have been selected that shouldn't have been selected?
Don Armand can count himself as very unlucky.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm breaking any news there.
No, agreed.
Don Armand is, every time I think about it, it's even more incredible because Mike Williams was in the squad for quite a while.
Yeah.
And Don Armand is just like a much, much better version of doing what Mike Williams does.
I completely agree.
The only reason that kind of, when I'm trying to add this up in my head, so he's got five locks in there. So one of Laws or Marrow is going to be considered.
Six, isn't it?
Is it six?
Yeah, I think it's six locks if you count Laws as a lock.
Ewells, Isiqua, Itoji, Cruis, Launchbury, Laws. Yes, six. Sorry, six locks in there. Itoji and Laws are going to be classed as sixes, which I guess Armand is probably more similar to them than, say, an Underhill or a Curry or a Robshaw. So I guess, would you have too many players of the same type if he was in there? The bit that I don't get is, what did you hear Eddie Jones's comments on
Yeah.
Armand not making the squad.
He prefers back rows that run in heavy traffic, and Don Armand does a lot of his work out on the wings. That's because where Exeter play him.
But yeah,
that's Don the Armand, Exeter game plan.
Don Armand is seems to me to be a very capable heavy traffic runner, as capable as almost any of them. So it was a bit surprising that comment.
Does it feel like he's giving James Haskell a kick up the backside, or actually, I'll call it. I think this is a changing of the guard. I'm not sure Haskell's ever going to get back in.
Well, I don't know, but initially, yeah, maybe it is a bit of a kick up the backside. He hasn't played particularly well. He hasn't played particularly badly. It does say a lot about how well everyone else has played, though.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, because Wasps and Haskell haven't had the best to start to their respective seasons. Eddie's comments are probably exactly right in this regard. So the door isn't closed, and in the next few years, if Haskell is playing top form, he will get back in there. I just think we've got all the game tape we need on James Haskell. Mm. We know exactly what his strengths and weaknesses are, and we're not going to learn anything new in the next 2 years.
That's fair. Yep. England's starting backline, for if you had to pick, based on who's available now, pick your backline. Go on, Phil. Sorry, not backline, back row.
Back row, Nathan Hughes.
Yeah, agreed. Flank, Robshaw's in the side, but is he going to go back on what he said? Chris Robshaw's not a seven, and play him seven? I suspect he might.
I think he will. I think he'll have Robshaw as seven. Well, I guess the other way of solving this problem is have Robshaw at six and Mario Toji at seven.
Yes.
which keeps Eddie Jones in the right.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's more important, making sure he's continually right. I know that's what I would do. So maybe there's something in it, maybe there's nothing in it. Sam Simms started at seven for Exeter against Sale.
Yeah.
He has played there before in Anglo-Welsh matches last season.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie Jones said he thinks he doesn't see him as an eight.
That's what he said.
And 12. Rob Baxter said, well, no, I see him as an eight, but someone who can also slot in elsewhere in the back row. Eddie Jones said, I'm not sure he's big enough to be an eight, but we'll see.
Personally, at seven, I can't look past Underhill. I think Underhill's been amazing. Picked up a shoulder injury today, though, so that is a bit of a worry.
Went off after 40 minutes. I do worry about him because he does so much hard work.
Yeah, he's built like a little boulder, isn't he?
Yeah, but he tackles full on all the time and hits every ruck. So,
I mean,
it does worry me, the attrition rate of that.
He's not that big either. I don't think he's that big. He's like 6'2", is he, maybe?
Right, so we've got... What is
Underhill.
It?
Underhill.
I think this is a perfect autumn international window to introduce a couple of young guys. I think he's going to see, in very Eddie Jones fashion, who sinks, who swims. He's going to give Tom Curry, and who I think will probably... I think he's above Sam Underhill in the pecking order currently. And Sam Underhill... it'll give them a crack, but I wouldn't be surprised, as you say, pick six locks, maybe in the big game, which is Australia.
And Argentina's
Courtney Laws at six.
So these locks he's picked are such phenomenal athletes, such physical specimens, that it wouldn't surprise me at all if Laws goes at six and Itoji is at seven. I mean, it would surprise me if that was starting. But you'll see each of them in the back row. Will not surprise me at all.
Yeah. It would not surprise me. It would surprise me to have both of them in there.
Now, I've got the most pertinent question, which neither of you asked.
Go on.
I don't know why. Who is going to be the next Luther Burrell or the next Tamana Harrison?
Or get 28 minutes and then just be cut and never
Piers
seen
Francis.
Again.
Oh, that's a
good shout.
Spot on. Piers Francis, 22 minutes on the field, would you say?
So,
Hook...
I was actually expecting Denny Solomona to be the next one.
He's too talented, mate.
But he can't defend.
He's getting better at it.
Well, look, so he can put in big shots, but that's not defence. That's not an all-encompassing defensive package.
Completely agree. I would like to go gambling with Denny Solomona because he strikes me as the most lucky man in the world. Every time he kicks the ball, it just bounces the right way.
Just the right side of the line.
Amazing. Amazing. He must be incredible at roulette.
Right, just jumping on to the Welsh squad then. Come on then, JB, you're a Welshman. Does this has this filled you with optimism with loads of youngsters being put in? Jamie Roberts being put out to pasture?
Yeah, shame about Jamie Roberts, actually.
But Owen Watkin and Owen Williams as potential 12 options in a new look, because Scott Williams also dropped. So yeah, there's going to be a new look 12 axis.
Yeah, Owen Watkin strikes me as a very, very nice player indeed. If anyone watched the Saracens game, he was instrumental in giving Saracens a very hard run. So that's quite interesting. And I quite like the idea that they need to turn this Wales squad over a bit. I mean, a lot was made, was it last Six Nations or Six Nations before, about how many international caps Wales have. Actually, it's not important. What is important is keeping the team nice and fresh.
No, do you know what is important? Because actually, Wales did this last year. They picked a load of new faces in the squad
and then
never actually used them.
Yeah.
So they've got to actually use these players.
Well, Warren Gatland is a genius, so we will wait and see what he
does. Well, it was Rob Howley that was in charge last autumn.
Ah, that'll be it then.
That makes a lot of sense. So there is so Scott Williams is out, but his Scarlets teammate, 30-year-old Kiwi-born Hadley Parks.
Good player.
He's a solid player.
The latest rugby mercenary.
He's a decent player. He doesn't qualify for Wales
until the last game.
Until the 2nd of December. So he's only available for the last game.
But they're going to be wrapping him in cotton wool until then, because if he doesn't get selected in that, he won't be able to play for another 2 years.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, because the law comes in in January the 1st for 5 year.
So he's got a 28-day window where he's eligible for Wales, and after that it takes another two years.
It's the same for Ireland's Bundy O'Aki.
Oh, yeah. Good, solid Irish lad.
I realised that was a little... that doesn't sit easy with me, really. The fact that they've got to blood all these players, even if they don't deserve it.
Oh, God, I thought you were going to say it doesn't sit well with you that they're picking players that have only been playing, living in a country for 3 years and they're allowed to play international rugby. You're all for that, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't care about that. I think it's nonsense. I'd say just go play wherever you want.
But does this for Wales signal this is the end of Gatland ball, isn't it? This is the end of Warren ball.
Haven't we been calling for the end of Gatland ball?
Oh no, I've been calling for it for years. But you've been saying
I like it.
No, you've been saying you like it, but this is it. Gatland is showing you he's not picked Jamie Roberts, and he's picked Owen Watkin and Owen Williams.
Yeah, and you know he might even go for two playmakers. Who knows?
Well, exactly.
Yeah, you know,
two playmakers would be interesting. I mean, you saw how well it can potentially work with Sexton and Farrell.
Yeah. So Welsh squad is reasonable. I think they're going to get hammered by Australia. I think Australia, after seeing them against the All Blacks, are going to annihilate them.
Right, a couple of things. Alex Cuthbert is still in. Dan Lydiot is in somehow.
Does he still play rugby?
Exactly. Apparently, and Thomas, so Dan Lydiot is in. Thomas Young can't get in that Welsh squad. If he was English, he'd be starting seven.
Thomas Young
for England.
He's good.
He's the form seven in the Premiership.
I'd say Underhill is playing better than Thomas Young.
Seven, as in the seven in a traditional seven mould, which England don't have anyone like that. I mean, Wales admittedly are blessed with Justin Tipperick.
Do you know who I've not seen anything of this year? Nothing. I thought I'd see loads of him. Is Matt Kvesic. Sorry, just changing it completely. You say there's no additional sevens.
Is he injured?
He must be, mustn't he? Surely.
Did he play on the bench in the first game when they played Gloucester? When they lost to Gloucester?
Probably for line-out calls and stuff like that.
Yeah. Right, Wales, this Sam Cross, that's the surprise inclusion. One game he's played. The sevens player.
One game, wow.
Yeah, one game and he's in. So they're giving him a go.
Is he back row?
He's a seven.
Yeah.
But Wales do seem to do this occasionally. I'm sure they brought George North into the squad ridiculously early in his
coverage. Yeah.
And they did it with another guy who we've not seen since, Henry or Harry someone, who on the wing, scored an amazing try, never saw him again. what's his name? I can't remember.
And the one thing you're going to be hearing from commentators all autumn, if Owen Watkin plays, is they're going to do it as every time they mention him. Owen Watkin, who was only playing Principality Premiership rugby 4 weeks ago. They're going to say that all the time.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So I would be relatively positive if I were a Welshman.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good squad. Do you want to do Scotland and Ireland?
Yeah, go on then. So Scotland squads... We've got another you know, proud Scott Byron McGuigan, who actually got a really Scottish name, and he's got a Scottish grandparent, so that's very different.
No, he's got a Scottish mum.
Scottish mum, is it?
Yeah, yeah, his mum's fiercely Scottish.
Oh, there you go, like, good lad.
He actually grew up supporting Scotland, but I think would have been very happy if he's able to play for Namibia before Scotland came back to pick him. So, yeah, well done, Byron, because that is really well deserved.
It's really good, and to the extent where he's keeping Tim Visser out of the Scotland squad, which I'm delighted about because he's in my fantasy rugby draft team, which means I get to select him in the next round. So all good. So other than that, for Scotland,
well, there's a couple of other Luke Hamilton, of course.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Welsh Luke Hamilton playing in England.
Born in Stirling, though, apparently.
Was he born in Stirling? But yeah, he's played Wales under 20s.
Yes.
Wales age grade.
You know, the logical extension of what would happen if you were relatively smart. There's been all that, a little bit of controversy about the RFU going, it's not fair, loads of our players getting picked up that we're developing in academies and whatever. Anyway, so potentially the next step is, just like Scotland have got some talent identification people scouting Premiership academies and all the rest of it for people that might be Scottish eligible. Mm. It'll be scouting professional players who might be about to give birth and trying to persuade them to come and go to a Scottish hospital to give birth to their child.
Good.
Yeah. Upgrade the maternity suites in the Scottish hospitals.
Yeah.
Leave the option open, a little bit of breed, especially if you got like Longo Mulapola's sister and Castro Giovanni giving birth to a child. Come on in, get them in. All expenses paid. We'll come to Scotland.
The RFU stuff on the players being pinched is quite incredible. Because there was two...
It's not really a problem, is it?
Well, there were two referenced from this Scotland squad, being Chris Harries and Daryl Marfo.
Daryl Marfo?
Daryl Marfo, the former Quinns prop who's now at Edinburgh.
If you had to put them in the pecking order for England, where would they be?
Oh yeah, but hang on,
not in the top 30, 40 in their position.
Aren't England still smarting from the loss of Donny Prop?
Yeah, Donny Prop, obviously. Thomas Francis.
Thomas Francis must be. Anyway, they must be devastated by that. It's a hammer blow to the English game.
The fact that they have to select Harry Williams ahead of him in the England squad.
I wouldn't worry about it. In fact, I wouldn't have said anything because it does make him sound a little bit petty. That actually,
it makes him sound really petty.
They're not players.
And Ireland, the big story there, and. The Irish press seem to be, and I don't know if it's fair to do so, they seem to be drawing the two stories together. Simon Zeebo being left out and Bundy Oaki being brought into the Irish squad. Now, I've said where I stand on this. I'm glad that World Rugby are bringing in this new residency laws. It's a farce that Bundy Oaki is going to be playing international rugby for Ireland. Good luck to him, and he deserves to make all the money and get all the representative honours he can, but it's ridiculous that the system exists where he can play rugby for Ireland. Crazy, but that's the world we live in until January. Yeah. So he's going to be an Irish international. And fair play to him, but I don't think it's fair to draw the two stories together, because people seem to be saying Simon Zeebo is going to be leaving to play in France, and he's been left out. But he's Irish born and bred. Yet someone who's only been here 3 years, you know, will happily let him play for Ireland.
Yeah, the Irish journalists do get very excited, don't they? Shame if it is a shame if Simon Zeebo's career for Ireland just stops abruptly because he's made this decision. I wouldn't be too happy about that, but I can see why they have left him out. He's not been playing maybe as well as some of the other guys.
I don't think that makes any difference. He's chosen where he's playing next season. He's not going to be available for him for the World Cup.
But I think if he was playing phenomenal top of his game rugby, he'd probably be in the squad.
Yeah.
With that said, though, so there are some very talented players in there: Byrne, Conway, Stockdale. Really talented. But then, like, Dave Carney's in there as a winger.
I know.
Dave Carney's in there as a winger?
Yeah.
Oh, what is the boy called who plays for Leinster?
Byrne?
No.
The one who scored... The one who scored the first try this weekend.
Wow.
I don't know, he's only a young lad.
Did you see the try?
No.
He's got a very...
Dynamite, mate.
Very nice try against Ulster.
Yeah, I was watching it kind of a bit drunk at the time. I thought, wow, that guy's he's a hero. Good. He's
did you
very
did
good.
You venture onto Twitter at any point when whilst inebriated, JB?
Yeah, I've changed my Twitter account to if you're bothered about spelling, please unfollow me because I think I spelt like his surname M O R A or something. But he's dynamite, mate. He's dynamite.
So as for the international squads, there you go. A lot of things that weren't surprising. A few interesting stories, but definitely getting excited for the upcoming internationals. Just a quick game of who am I at this point,
ooh,
guys.
Yeah.
So shout out when you've got a guess.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Bless you. So who am I?
Excuse me.
Bless you.
This weekend, I played the 100th Premiership appearance of my entire career.
Okay.
I went to school with Mako Vunipola.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Hold on a second. Yeah. My dad played for Northampton Saints in the 1980s. My sister is an England netball player.
Who on earth is this?
I was once offered trials by Derby County. I was ranked age group number one in tennis in Derbyshire as a 10-year-old.
Derbyshire. So, no, I know it's not him. I know Jonathan Joseph was a handy tennis player. But I'm not. That's not my guess. I'm just just commenting.
I went on the recent Lions tour to New Zealand, but didn't play in any test matches.
Phil? Jonathan Joseph?
It's Jonathan Joseph.
He's from Derbyshire.
Yeah, apparently so.
I thought he was from Reading or somewhere.
Yeah. Born in Derby. Yeah, you got it right, yeah. He played a little bit better this weekend.
He had a decent performance.
He's under pressure from Henry Slade, isn't he, for that England shirt?
God, he's under pressure from every which way for that 13 jersey.
Well,
from Slade Daly.
Not Elliot Daly.
Daly picked up an injury.
Yeah, we don't know what the extent of that is, but he won't be flying out to Portugal.
Yeah.
Gutted.
That's what we do know because they're going to have a scan. There's him, there's Matt Mullen, but Matt Mullen and Piers Francis both injured as well. They're not in with a realistic shot of starting.
No.
Jonathan Joseph, Elliot Daly does.
Yep.
And that may change things. So we'll wait and see what the outcome of that scan is.
Yeah. So interesting today. Do you want to talk about the Bath game?
There's one thing I forgot to mention in relation to the international squads that I've got to say. The Wales Online comments section is so good. Because, so according to people on the Wales Online comments section, the answer for Wales is James Hook. Get him back in. You need someone with flair.
Hmm.
Good.
Well, I guess they watch more Welsh rugby than we do. Maybe. No. I mean, I doubt it, but maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway. I tell you what, Simon Thomas, Wales Online, I don't know anyone who writes as much as he does. He must be the busiest man in rugby. I mean, there is not a day that goes by that we don't learn another five things about a subject that we didn't know that we knew about.
Yeah, there is that old adage of quality and quantity, isn't there?
Oh, I know. There is some high quality in there, but he writes a lot. The busiest man in rugby.
Behind yourself.
Behind yourself. Yeah. In fact, yeah, before we get onto the games, let's delve into this.
Oh, here you go.
So,
the biggest breaking story of the weekend.
Yeah, the biggest breaking story of the weekend is the news that Marlon Yard is, well, I'm still using language like it's not completely set in stone. It will be announced imminently by the clubs involved and the player involved, but Marlon Yard has signed for Sale Sharks and will link up with them in a very rare mid-season transfer.
Very rare.
Well, you say transfer. I don't believe it is a transfer, actually. Well, it kind of is a transfer.
Well, there's no fee involved.
There isn't.
He's trading one club for another.
Yeah. The Sale are taking on his contract, I understand. I could be completely wrong on that, though.
So, as I understand it, this isn't only to do with the fact that he was out partying with Tiny Temper and missed a team run the other week, for which he was dropped.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's more of a longer-standing thing where I think Harlequins and Marlon Yard have decided that it would be best for everybody involved if he went off and tried to reinvigorate himself and his career by going to another club.
That is a very polite way of putting the... Yeah, it's very... polite way of explaining the situation Marlon Yard finds himself in. Yes,
how would you put it then?
I think I'd use. I think he's not very popular at the moment in Quinns, to put it mildly. And I think, do you know what I do think? A few weeks ago, I mentioned, just kind of off the cuff, I don't think Quinns is a particularly happy camp.
Yeah.
And I think he might be a victim or an instigator of that happiness in that camp. And what I mean by that is I'm not sure those lads really get on so well. He definitely doesn't get on too well with some of the boys there, to put it mildly. But then you've got other weird things going on, haven't you? Like Tim Visser being dropped completely and then announcing that he's fit on Twitter. You've got a little bit of tension in the pack too. And I wonder if it's more for Quinns that they just want to get rid of a bad apple.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was talking to two of my friends this weekend who'd been to watch Graham Swan do some speaking. And they were saying Graham Swan was quite candid about the disruptive nature of Kevin Peterson.
Mm.
And when you've got these very talented individuals, but the disruption that they cause outweighs the talent that they have.
Yeah.
So there you get like a tipping point where it's best to get rid of them. And it, not knowing anything, but kind of looking from the outside in, it looks like you're at that position. So Yard is clearly a very talented player.
Yes.
But if he's failing to report for training on multiple occasions,
yep.
And obviously there are some other issues in there, then the disruption from that. And because Quinns, I always think of Quinns as like, they pride themselves about doing things the right way.
Mm.
But clearly some things are not being done the right way there at the moment. So if this allows them to move in the right direction, yeah, that's a good thing.
I've never met John Kingston. I've never spoke to him.
He hates Tiny Temper.
Does he?
That's what's going on. He hates Tiny Temper. It's all about a difference of opinion on music.
But he does seem like a very decent man. He seems like a very nice, decent man. That's the impression that I get of him.
Very straight-laced, straightforward.
Yeah. And I just wonder, like, maybe he's too nice. Maybe he's too nice. And actually, Marlon Yard getting out of London, going somewhere else, like Sale, to play for a director of rugby who isn't always as nice as, say, John Kingston is, that might be a really, really good move. I mean, if anyone can beat bad boy behaviour out of someone, or at least fashion it into a decent, into a decent rugby shape, it's Steve Diamond.
Oh, the night out, the Christmas night out for Sale.
Oh, my word.
James O'Connor, Marlon Yard.
James
Denny.
O'Connor and Marlon Yard are really good mates from their time at London Irish.
Are they?
Yeah, they're really good mates.
I expect there's going to be some fireworks there. It's going to be interesting.
If only someone like Danny Cipriani was coming back to really spice up the night out.
Oh, if only. Oh, my God, can you imagine?
So, before we get into any of that, right, so let's just rewind. So, I was working on BT Sport at the Sale Sharks v Exeter Chiefs match,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which turned out to be a bit of a dull affair in terms of a game as a spectacle. However, I can tell you that what was planned for the pre-game show was going to be mainly about the England squad that had been announced. However, on the day, there was a fair few changes to the running order for what was happening because some news emerged of Marlon Yard, as we've discussed. Now, Hugo Monnier, by the time we went on air, was able to confirm the rumour that Marlon Yard was going to be moving to Sale Sharks and said it was a done deal, despite the comments of Steve Diamond when I spoke to him before the game.
I've got a question about that interview, but we'll do it after.
We'll get to that. But where did this rumour originate? Well, what do you know? A certain Mr. Jay Fissler, Jay Beardmore on Twitter decided to announce this rumour. Well, now, quite often people might announce rumours on Twitter, but it's quite rare that it then gets enough oxygen and enough heat that it sort of bubbles out beyond an individual tweeting. But
yeah.
So what was the story here, Jay?
So let's just remember, I am effectively a nobody. I just do a podcast with my mates and that is it. Okay, so I don't pretend to be a reporter or anything else. Nothing like that. And I tweet out rumours quite a lot, particularly about Sale, because I enjoy tweeting about Sale. And they're the nearest club. So, obviously, I've tweeted before about Kieran Drawney. I've tweeted before about a potential signing of a certain Sonny Bill Williams. And I tweeted about Marlon Marland Yard. Within about 3 minutes, my phone started ringing. And they phoned me to tell me they completely deny it. It's completely false. There's nothing in it. Oh, and also you're banned from from all media and press, which is a phenomenal stance to take, as there's only three men that have ever really covered Sale in any depth. One being Neil Lee, who works at the club now. The other being Nathan Middleton, who's left, and me, who is now banned. So that is basically it. It was weird because I guess it's the first time they've actually taken me seriously. But there's a bigger story here, I guess, which is you get a real good insight to how the club is run and exactly what it is that's made them successful in the past but might not make them successful in the future. And what I mean by that is the all-encompassing power and, how can I call it, determination of Steve Diamond. So if you get in his way in any way, shape, or form, you've got to go.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which is exactly kind of what he's paid to do, which is why he's been so successful over the last God knows how many years with half the budget of other teams. So I guess the real experience you can take from this is that this is how they operate. I mean, this is what it is like to be inside the Diamond Sphere.
And you were in his way, so...
You were briefly inside the Diamond Sphere, and now you're outside
the Diamond Sphere. Oh, I'm massively... I'm... yeah, so I'm all by myself now. So no more Sale Press.
Let the chorus kick in.
Yeah, shame.
Any regrets, Jay?
No, not really. Got me 100 odd new Twitter followers. Got me a tweet from Gloucester. So it was a fascinating day. But it's a good insight into how the club is run. And I wonder if it will hold them back in certain ways. Even though in the short term it's obviously tremendously effective. In fact, you could argue in short term and long term it's been tremendously effective for them. But I just wonder if it might come back to haunt. That attitude might come back to haunt them at some point.
Now, when you got banned,
yes,
told you're not welcome,
uh-huh.
So presumably you just watched the game on TV.
No, I went to the stadium. I bought a ticket like many of the Exeter Chiefs fans did, and I watched the game from the stands. I got in 20 minutes late because of the bloody traffic.
Yeah.
At kickoff, apparently it looked empty, but it was quite full actually.
Oh no, it was not.
Oh, it was. By the time I got there, I was
quite
impressed. No,
mate, it wasn't quite full. The one end that's normally packed with the Sale fans, with one of the terraced ends, was half empty.
I think
that was a bad sign for me. I mean, I was.
You could not get to that ground.
I came from the wreck today, and Bath was gridlocked. Apparently, around Kingston Park, it was gridlocked. The reason being for both of those two games is they were sellouts. It was gridlocked around the AJ Bell Stadium, but it was not rugby traffic.
It was roadworks.
Yeah, what was the... I don't know. I went through like the back street way, and I'm pretty sure most of that traffic was aiming for the AJ Bell. What was the official attendance, Jill?
No.
Yeah, what I can tell you, Kingston Park sold out a home game for the first time in 9 years.
Massive, amazing.
Massive congratulations to Newcastle Falcons. That's what we should be talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, that is phenomenal work by them.
Yeah.
In fact, it should be almost like the model that clubs should look at. If you're an untrendy club, rip up your pitch, put in a plastic pitch, play attacking rugby, make some signings, and away you go.
Get a solid pack and a nice attacking set of backs.
Yeah, and by the way, the pack, most of the talent in that pack is homegrown. Callum Green, Callum Chick come to mind.
Callum Green? Are you sure about that?
Did I say Callum Green?
Yeah, Callum Chick. Yes, Callum Green is Nottingham.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh well, same sort of thing. Dave, what's his name?
So it begins with the same letter.
No, the guy that you love, Wilson,
Mark Wilson.
Mark Wilson. Wilson.
Yeah,
he's a Kendall boy, but he's come through Will Welch. Newcastle.
Yep. So it's
Rob Vickers.
Rob Vickers, yeah.
Sonatani tackle it. No.
Nearly Latu.
Toby Flood.
Yeah, actually.
Alex Tate.
Yeah.
Does Hodgson count? He's been and then gone and come back again.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. The second rows, Ryan Burrows, a back row coming through. yeah, there's good things going on at Kingston Park, and it's been much in the Exeter Chiefs mould. It's been gradually building. Didn't quite get the result they wanted this weekend. Just before we leave Marlin Yard, go on.
Right, so your interview with Steve Diamond.
Which one? The one before or the one after the game?
The one before.
Yeah, the one after the game was...
he looked very... he looked a little bit annoyed.
Yeah, a little bit.
Was there some shoulder contact after that interview? Because it looked like he was heading your direction.
Well, it's a tight little interview area.
Wow.
It's a tight little interview area, and he had to walk past me. He was in a hurry to get away. I'm sure that was... The reason he was in a hurry to get away was because he had a team talk to do or stuff to do, preparations... They were a little bit late, caught in the traffic, so...
Why didn't you dive to the floor holding your face?
If there, I'm sure any contact was incidental, if there was any.
It was rugby incident. was all it was.
No, it was... it was. Do you know what? He makes fantastic TV, doesn't pull any punches, and the game is better for having big characters in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what annoys me the most about the whole thing? Is... The persona you get when he's annoyed and he's doing the whole scowly thing is actually not the persona you get when you get him talking about Sale Sharks, when he's actually a really eloquent, really insightful bloke. It's like Jekyll and Hyde. If you get him on, like, the bad day, it's monosyllabic, no, yeah, can't, yeah, can't, don't approach players, no, no. If you get him on a good day, he can talk, he can actually persuade millionaires to part with checks in order to... In order to fund Sale Sharks, because he can be that engaging. Weird.
Do Sale need Marlin Yard?
Well, they do if they let Josh Charney go back to rugby league.
Yeah, that's the thing that jumps out to me. I would be absolutely fuming if I was Josh Charney.
Depends if he wants to go, though, doesn't it? And that's the other thing. Maybe he doesn't enjoy only getting three touches a game.
Mm.
You know, and he's very good at rugby league.
He probably enjoys the significantly higher salary in rugby union.
Mm. Yeah, so I don't think it's quite that cut and dry. And also, is there some pressure on Byron McGuigan to go to Scotland, though? Possibly.
Possibly, yeah.
So,
but if you add whatever Marlin Yard's market rate is that Sale will be paying...
Will they be paying that, though?
Yeah, I imagine so.
I'm not sure they will.
Surely you could have gone to France on the same money.
Yeah,
that's good.
Or better money.
I would spend that elsewhere in their side.
Yeah.
A lock, a prop.
They want a lock. They want
a fly half, a 12.
Yeah, so they're looking at a 12. Apparently, Josie van Rensburg is in the picture.
Johan Ranzi von...
By the way, who is a beast?
Rohan Jansi von Rensburg.
Yeah. Utter beast. If he comes to the Premiership...
Total quadzilla.
Wow. A couple of guys at second rail and a tight head prop. These are all on the shopping list.
Exactly.
But I guess...
Well, wing, they're pretty stacked.
Yeah.
Paolo Odogwu was great last year and he's not had a look in.
Still, I think he's still got a knock.
Mm. Well, anyway, we will leave that one just... if you are you gonna tweet any more? Because, well, you have been tweeting more... Rumours as well. Danny Cipriani back to Sale. You've been tweeting about.
Yeah, allegedly been offered a four year contract. From what I understand,
He tweeted you back saying fake news,
which is always a good hint that you're onto something, isn't it? Yeah. If you hear nothing, there's nothing in it. If you hear something back, you've probably got something.
So, on the rumours, do you see the Fissler rumour that Julian Surveyor has signed for Harlequins?
On a short-term deal.
Yeah. Julian Surveyor, by the way, with a rather feisty wife.
A very feisty wife.
Do not get on the wrong side of Fatima.
Now, I'm normally up to speed on players' wives. What's what's the deal with Julian Surveyor's wife?
She just responded. Like, so someone tweeted the rugby paper story, and she responded saying... neither Julian or I are aware of this. You need to stop with this, these nonsense rumours.
No. What she means to say is, Julian's not told me this yet. Yeah. Because he's over here for the Barbarians, not with the All Blacks.
Yeah. So he's playing against the All Blacks.
That's right.
This coming weekend.
I think this is definitely going to happen. Even if Fatima doesn't, I think it just makes too much sense.
Short-term deal would be brilliant.
Yeah, why not? Then go back to the Canes, win another Super Rugby thing.
Him and Vissa on the wings. Mm. That is a big wing combo.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and then Jamie Roberts supplying all that lovely ball.
So, we've talked about all the rumour mills. We've talked about JB being outlawed from one Avicii Premiership club. Let's get into some actual games then. What was your favourite game of the weekend, Phil?
Ooh. The only one that I got to watch live, actually, was the Bath-Gloucester game, which wasn't a brilliant game, but was a brilliant result for Gloucester.
I thought it was a good game, actually, in bits.
Very sporadic bits. So neither team, it felt like they controlled the game particularly well. Neither team were playing where they should be playing the rugby.
Mm.
Gloucester just did it slightly better at the right time.
Yeah.
Bath, I said this to you before the pod, I am convinced that Bath, in order to get the best out of some of Bath's players, they are not getting the best out of other players. So they've got a very good kicking halfback combination.
Yes.
And they utilise those a lot. But you've got two starting Test Lions in Faletau and Anthony Watson, and you've got probably the form attacking winger in the country one of the best of the last 2 years in Rokodoguni. And Rokodoguni scored 2 tries, but hardly did anything other than finish those tries. Watson hardly did anything. Faletau did nothing for 75 minutes.
But when he did do something,
then he made that incredible break to ultimately set up the second Rokodoguni try. But you're not seeing the best of them. And it feels like the combination is just, it doesn't work quite yet. I think I really want to see Freddie Burns getting back fit and seeing what he can do with that team, with that back line.
They don't have a tremendous amount of distribution either, do they? I mean, outside of Priestland, there's not very much in the way of playmakers. There's good runners, but, you know, for instance, Saracens can always bring Alex Goode into the line. Who is 12 at the moment? Max Clark. I don't think he's a particularly good distributor.
No, he's a good runner. He's a solid player.
So everything is basically on.
But Priestland isn't a great distributor.
He's pretty good.
He's pretty good. He can stand and fire a pass. He's not like a Charlie Hodgson type player. The key to having a really good playmaker is being able to fix a man. And the fact that, so someone like George Ford, because he can straighten the line and because he can beat men, he's always going to hold defenders so he creates space outside him.
Yes, I agree with that.
Priestland is not going to beat a man. He's not going to make a break, so he doesn't hold defenders.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've always thought Priestland was very good for Wales because he gives the ball to better players. I do see he doesn't have much of a running game, but he does play very, very flat. I think he is a pretty good distributor, but it's all on him. You know, there's nothing else.
If you class him as a good distributor at the moment, he's not getting the best out of that back line.
No, he's not, because he's not playing that sort of game.
Well, they're playing a largely kicking game. They're playing without the ball. They have the least amount of possession of any Premiership side. Kind of in a Saracens mould from a few years ago, when Saracens were content just to kick the ball away and use the pressurised defence. That's what Bath have based their game around. That's why they've been squeezed. That's why they've... So in the last 5 matches, they've only scored 9 tries, including the 2 today, which is not a great return.
No.
That includes when they've had Benetton, Treviso at home.
Oh, yeah, where they failed to pick up the bonus point.
So they're not, like you say, with the attacking options they've got, you'd expect them to create a little bit more. They were poor by their standards today against Gloucester, but fair play, Gloucester. Took a lot of... Bearing in mind that's their first away win.
Yeah.
They haven't even been in with a shout of games when they've had away matches this season. So to grind that one out, they showed a lot of dog and a lot of physicality in defence as well. So there's something to build on there for Gloucester. But they did catch Bath cold. Just on that one, Phil, I know you'll love this.
Yeah.
I remembered today to bring back the little stat pack that we get from the stat guy Aid. So pass that round to Phil, he'll love that. A little bit of bedtime reading for you, Phil.
Ooh.
Thanks, mate.
So yeah,
excellent.
Fair play, Gloucester. I still don't think it's going to be Gloucester's year. Trademark Egg Chasers.
No,
to that other podcast that keeps saying Oh, it's Gloucester's year, like they invented it anyway. but it's not going to be Gloucester's year, but maybe next year.
Maybe next year. I do like... I'm liking Ackerman more and more with that team, I think.
There is something which I've been quite interested in. I still don't really know much about it. Exeter mentioned it a few weeks ago, and I'm pretty sure Gloucester were trying to do it this weekend. And also, with the Rugby League World Cup being played currently, sort of pertinent as well. And that's the concept of the running exit. I am sure that's what Gloucester's game plan was, specifically for the first 20 minutes, because they were playing everything from everywhere.
Yeah, a little bit too much, I think.
Mm. Yeah, but I'm wondering, like, is this a new... Because Exeter did it against... Who was it? I can't remember now.
Oh, they were doing it against Montpellier.
Yes.
They tried and failed almost to their own demise against Montpellier. Yeah.
And I wonder why they're doing it and how it's meant to work. So in rugby league, we know how it works because it's rugby league. And I wonder if it's been stolen... That concept's been stolen directly from rugby league.
Well, so I think of it more as a strategic option, which you don't have in rugby league because your options are virtually always binary in rugby league, whereas union, there's far more options. But if you change it up, so if you start off kicking, then you'll get three or four players sitting deep for the defensive team.
Yeah.
So then there's always going to be room to start running it. So you use it to create, you use it at the right time to create room elsewhere.
Yeah, I can see that. I've just never heard of teams actually referencing it before. Moving on from running exits then, anyone watch the Rugby League World Cup?
Highlights.
I've seen the highlights of a couple of the games.
Big Sam out injured.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, what, for the devastated. Whole thing? Well, I don't know.
He limped off. I know that much.
Yeah.
Tell you what, I watched most of about 60 minutes of it and then I had to actually do some work. It was awesome, mate. It is. Every time I watch rugby league, I struggle to understand why it has not dominated the earth.
Can I just say one thing that's incredible about that? That Australian rugby league kit has never changed.
Yes, we were talking about this.
And it looks amazing.
I love that kit.
It is maybe the best rugby kit on earth.
Yeah, I go along with that.
Brilliant.
The thin striped socks, that's always been like that. That just the chevron. Do you know what? They understand how good it is. Like the All Black rugby union kit. Don't mess around with it when you've got something good.
Well said,
Gloucester
Tim.
Full hoops.
Although, they have done something on it. Does anyone know what little change they've made for this year?
Is there an Aboriginal detail?
So close. So close. It's not that.
Nothing ethnic at all.
I guess it has... Yeah, I guess it is a little bit. It has got... And you have to...
Is it like? It's not like the Welsh new rugby Welsh jersey. Like there's contours of the land somewhere on the pitch.
No, it's not. Although I hate this almost as much. It says "Rise" on the jersey because someone wrote a bloody poem. So they do some poem called "Rise," and "Rise" stands for like respect something something something. it's just awful, and they get in this little huddle. I think Jonathan Thurston might have read the poem.
Does the I stand for Indigenous? Population.
Yeah, probably. Something ridiculous like that. So, that's what they're doing now. Because, of course, we can't have sport coming without some, vain virtue signalling from someone about something. So, yeah, Mark's down for that, but Mark's up for the kit. And also...
It's lovely.
Yeah. Also, I was watching it in amazement because having watched Rugby Union for so long and watched how regulated the game has become... In terms of high shots, every shot was high. Every shot was high. I was like, these guys would be banned for an accumulative 340 years if this was played under rugby union sanctions.
There'd be rugby union referees like fainting at the sight of some of these high shots.
Yeah. And
I actually tweeted Alison Pollock to see if she's watching.
That's where she needs to put her energy.
Yeah, and on that, We're never going to get, and a lot of people would say this is great, and I'm not going to be one of those people that's going to go on about how it was better in the old days, because there's so much that's great and better now, that this element is not one of the things that I think is great and better now in rugby union. And I do miss the days when some of the tackles which get penalised and yellow carded and red carded were just fair game and solid hard rugby.
One of the things I thought about this game, watching all these hits, and they hit a lot, the tackle count is far higher than Union.
Yeah.
The tackles are far higher than Union, as in physically high. And I just wondered, I'd like to know what the statistics are on concussions in rugby league. Maybe they're not reported in the same way, so you've got to remember that. And also what the injury rate is. Because by far the most injuries in rugby union happen in the tackle.
Yeah.
So maybe we're missing a trick here. Every time we try to make it more safe, somehow it becomes, again, more dangerous.
Do you know what? Last year when there was all the talk about concussions and how players should go lower, there was actually someone came out with a study saying, actually, the most concussions happen...
The tackler on knees on, and hips.
On the tackler, not the tackled player.
Completely agree.
And head on knees. Yeah. So I'm sure there's some statistics that might come out saying higher body height tackling is statistically safer from a concussion point of view.
Do you know what I think... What I think this concussion thing is, I know I've said it before, it's more about perception than it is about actual concussion.
Yes, totally. It's all about the class action lawsuit that will come in 10 years' time. It's all. I actually think that's what the laws are all about. That this, because the thing I don't like now is just you see it every weekend now, and it's never gonna. I'll stop moaning about it because it's never gonna change. But is the Well, in that football parlance, people go, well, if you make contact with the face, you're going to get a yellow card.
Or the
rubbish.
Entitled to go down. That's the one I hate. You're not entitled to go down. In any circumstance, are you entitled to go down?
The seatbelt tackle's the new one, which seems to be getting penalised all the time, which I don't necessarily think... A player diving towards the ground and a guy wrapping his arm over the shoulder and across the chest is now getting penalised.
Yeah. Ironically, there's some of those that are just...
Yeah.
I can't see what the other option is. There was one with Banahan.
Yes.
In
yes.
the game. That Dalio and Austin Healy were like, what else is there to do? Yeah. In that situation.
It's ironic that they've named it after a safety feature.
One other thing while we're on the Rugby League World Cup.
Oh, Papua New Guinea pumping Wales as well.
Well, yeah, we don't need to mention that too much. Papua New Guinea actually look like a decent team,
they
though.
They do.
Rugby League have some of the weirdest ways of deciding tournaments. Like the historic club call... In Super League.
In the Rendezvous Hotel.
In Wakefield.
So if you didn't know what that was, if you don't follow Rugby League, can you explain that briefly, Phil?
So the exact mechanisms... So I think the top six, this is historically, the top six would qualify for the playoffs. The top two would be exempt. And then you'd have the bottom four of the top six would play each other. So two of the bottom four of the top six would go through, and then the number one team would select who of the winning two they wanted to play, and they would do it live on Sky Sports.
So it would have been like
in the club call.
Yeah, it would have been Mark McCall and and Owen Farrell sat there saying, "Do you want to play against Wasps or do you want to play against Leicester?"
Yeah,
and all they do is say, in the 2014. Super League, Tetley's Bitter Super League
semi-final.
We are going to select Hull Kingston Rovers,
and that's it. And they're all drinking out of those, you know, those stupid cups that you only get in conferencing facilities, and those urns of coffee. Everyone's drinking gallons of urns of coffee.
So, from the club call, do you know what the format is for the Rugby League World Cup?
Oh, come on!
The tables, right? I'll explain this as simply as I can. There are four pools. Simple.
Okay.
Two of the pools have four teams in.
Only two?
Two of the pools have three teams in.
Right.
Now, they all play three games in the group stage, which means the pools of three have to have a cross-pool game.
Ah.
The pools of four, the top three... from each of the pools of four qualifies.
Right.
So only one team from each of the pools of four goes out. The pools of three, only one team from each of the pools of three qualifies. And then you get a standard quarterfinal, semifinal, final.
That's brutal, isn't it? If you're in a pool of three, it's brutal.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
They do somehow. I mean, this is kind of the curse of rugby league, isn't it? The administration is so awful.
So two teams go out of two pools which have four teams in, and four teams go out of two pools which only have three teams in.
Yes, correct.
Bonkers. What are they playing at?
Correct. Now, it's all because, well, there's only really three good teams in rugby league, being Australia, New Zealand, England, and of those, only Australia are actually really very, very good. But then you occasionally get like a decent Tonga vintage, which I think we have this year, a decent Samoa vintage, a decent Papua New Guinea vintage. So it just means that you don't know who's going to be good, and there's not even enough teams to make a standard 16, like a 4x4 pool system. So this is how they've solved the problem.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
Staggering, isn't it? It is. Do you know what is even more staggering? There's not 13 blokes in South Africa that can play rugby league to a high enough standard.
Yeah.
There is. I'm telling you now.
There are.
I could find 13 blokes in South Africa in about an hour.
Well, aren't
and
they?
And they'd give Ireland rugby league a game.
Yes.
Potentially what the one promising thing for rugby league is, haven't they stolen a little bit of a march on rugby union? Isn't there a US team that's going to be joining Super League?
They've got the Toronto Wolfpack in Division 2, but they're talking about a New York or USA big team.
It is and such a perfect game for the American market.
And USA are playing in this. Yeah. They got a hiding from Fiji, but they are playing.
I think you've said it before, with any concerns that people have about the physicality of rugby union, which let me not give anyone the wrong idea. It is still a brutal sport, and I love that about it. And it will be, and it's incredibly physical and technical.
Is as brutal, if not more brutal than
incredible. However, with the changes in rugby union, I think going more brutal is the way for rugby league to go. It really is.
yeah.
Just a bloodbath.
And Mick Morgan and Steve-O commentating. get him off the field! and ridiculous things like the club call. Go for it. Do it all. All the gimmicks.
Yeah. Well, talking of moving forward, there is also some massive news, but we'll tell you about that after this advert.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There you go. There is an advert. Do you want to just quickly mention Cornerstone before we go into...
I would, actually. I think this would be a perfect time. And that is, I was going to get Twitter up then to give the one of many endorsements, but I can't connect with your internet, so I'm not going to do that. But we're getting loads of people all the time just getting in touch, going, giving Cornerstone a go. It's amazing. And we suggest that you do the same. They're a mail order razor company. There's lots of people that have come on the market trying to copy what Cornerstone did. They were the first. They were the best. They still are. They are a mail order razor company that could send you 6 precision engineered razors and a free aluminium shaft. None of this plastic rubbish that other companies are sending out. Get an aluminium metal one, heavy, weighty one in your hand with your initials on it, which you can personalise. And what I'm talking about for this, £4, less than a pint to give it a go with absolutely no obligation. So give it a go for £4, four of your hard-earned pounds, and you will not be disappointed. Trust us on this one. And if you are, then, well, no, you won't be, but if you are, there's no obligation. £4, cornerstone.co.uk, and you get that because you get £10 off because you listen to us. cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or...
banned from sale at checkout. No, egg 10 at checkout.
Just while we're talking commercial stuff, and we were mentioning rugby league gimmicks, Saracens had another little match day gimmick, or another little gimmick they've been going on with. They've had dominoes delivered to their seats.
Yep. Yep.
And such things. They were going for a world record silent disco.
Oh, I hate Salim Dusko so much. I just hate, I really detest him.
And you're a man who's played for the Welsh deaf team.
I have. And now, that's a bunch of players that would get nothing out of a silent disco. Yeah, it's just so hipster, isn't it? It's horribly hipster. It's so quirky.
Well, good luck to Saracens trying to break that world record nonetheless.
Why? Why, boys? You're a serious sporting outfit. Don't bother. I wanted to say... to say something, but I can't remember what it was. So I'll let you carry on saying things, Tim.
Okay, Connacht beat Munster.
Good.
Yeah.
Fair play to the West Coast boys. That's a big win, that.
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
I nearly had to part with 40 of my English pounds.
What? How come?
Did you have a bet on this?
No. In another Pro 12 result, Benetton nearly beat Edinburgh. And I was down to buy a Benetton shirt if they did it.
Ooh.
Yeah, they didn't, unfortunately. But they did run them close. And Southern Kings also scored against...
Glasgow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It did seem fairly routine, that, for Glasgow.
Aziba looked pretty handy against... I think they played Cheetahs.
They lost by 1 point to Cheetahs. Yeah. Which is not a bad result.
Speaking of
all.
Cheetahs and large cats and stuff, breaking news from BBC Wales... A lynx has escaped from a wildlife park in Ceredigion. I don't know how to say that. How do you say that?
Yes, close enough.
A Eurasian lynx, about twice the size of a domestic cat, has escaped from Borth Wild Animal Kingdom near Aberystwyth. That's your neck of the woods, Jay.
Nah, that's Mid Wales, mate. I'm North Wales.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so they said we have fully trained keepers on hand to deal with the situation, said a park official. Failing that, we'll just call Scott Balder.
Yeah. No, they didn't. Surely the opposite. Surely we want to get Scott Balder as far away from this lynx as we possibly can.
No, he's experienced. You learn from your mistakes.
Exactly.
So you'll never make them again.
So other matches over the weekend. Newcastle didn't quite... We haven't seen the highlights for this game, but Leicester...
Some good tries from both,
good
teams.
Good win at Kingston Park.
The Vianu try is something quite special.
Yeah, Vianu stepping inside and outside everyone. And Johnny May scoring his 10th try of the season.
Yeah.
Brilliant kick.
What great
kick
business.
Pass.
I mean, that really is great business for both clubs.
Yeah, Johnny May scoring... what was ultimately the winning try, and Ed Slater scoring the winning try.
Mm.
Brilliant.
I'm trying to think of the worst deal of the summer. That'll come to me later, but I think the Ed Slater, Johnny May must be the best.
Maybe we could have a think about the worst deal for next week.
I've got one.
Go on.
Freddie Burns to Bath.
I think it will be a good deal when they get him playing.
Starting money, big money for a substitute. Who's banned?
Yeah, he's banned at the moment. And when they get him playing, I think it'll be good.
I think it'll be Piers Francis again, because they got Dan Bigger next season. What are they going to do with Piers Francis then?
And did you see Harry Melander's try?
Yeah. Gas.
Unbelievable gas.
Proper gas.
He's only gassing Christian Wade as well.
Yeah, check out the Twitter conversation between Christian Day and Harry Melander, fairly hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
With the pictures of llamas and
stuff.
There's a llama that looks just like Harry Melander.
Harry Melander looks like a lot of it. He looks like Beavis out of Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, someone mentioned that one.
The Russian from Rocky IV.
Yeah, Dolph Lundgren.
How many people look like both Dolph Lundgren and Beavis?
And the llama.
Yeah, he's doing well there. It was good to see Wasps actually... It kind of pulls back. Wasps strike me as a kind of like a team that have been through a seriously traumatic patch in when losing Sippers and have just about managed to pull themselves out of it.
Well, as we kept mentioning, whilst they were in this bad patch, Exeter Chiefs lost loads and loads of games at the start of last season.
Mm.
So, yeah, it feels like they've found a little bit of mojo. They simplified their game plan a bit, played a little bit more direct and a little bit shorter, not going wide so quick. And also, Northampton weren't at the races.
So there's a couple of things that, if I was a Northampton fan or someone involved in Northampton, I would be extremely frustrated at. Namely, the Dan Robson picking up and going down the blind side and just waltzing in.
Mm. Albeit it wasn't given.
It was, wasn't it?
No,
it wasn't.
No, the one that wasn't. The try that should have been given.
Yeah, it should have been given, but it wasn't given.
It wasn't.
So there's that one.
They got away with that.
But the Wade, Wade try, which was, it was the Tuala break that then got turned over, that Ashley Johnson hoofed downfield, and no one from Northampton even bothered to run after the ball, which was astonishing. There was no one. There was no one within 40 yards of Christian Wade when he picked that ball up.
Mm.
And I just couldn't work it out. It's like no commitment.
Yeah, they go in phases, not Northampton. Some days they look completely switched off. Other times they look like absolute warriors.
Yeah.
Well, they haven't looked that switched off since the opening day.
Apart from when they got hammered again in the Champions Cup by Saracens.
Yeah, I think Saracens just take their souls.
Saracens have got their number. But then this performance by Northampton at home in a East Midlands derby.
Yes.
Or Midlands derby. Yeah, very disappointing from
Northampton
to
win this. I'm amazed.
Good game, though.
That they rolled over quite so easy.
And like you say, good to see Wasps. Like, good to see Willie LaRue justifying some of his salary. Good to see Juan de Jong also starting to show up as well. So they've taken their time bedding in, really.
Mm. Yeah. Another game worth mentioning, Worcester Quins.
Yeah, my goodness. What happened? Well, if Worcester had someone who could kick goals, they would have won. They scored 6 tries to 5.
And missed 4 shots at goal.
5.
Oh, well, sorry.
They got 1 conversion.
Yeah.
So they missed 5 conversions, and there was also penalty shots that they missed. So I'm not sure John O'Lance is necessarily the great hope. Well, I haven't seen the highlights. I don't know whether they were tough kicks. Or
he did play well.
He did he?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, the attacking...
He played very well. He created a couple of tries, got a couple of assists, but the kicking... So, because of the nature of the game, they did score a lot of the tries out wide, but you would still expect a better return than he got.
Yeah.
Well, they only needed another couple of kicks, and they...
Yeah, so if you get 3 of the 5 conversions that they missed, and it would have been a draw.
Yeah, Worcester just seemed cursed. Like, everything they do... Just
2 points.
To...
2 points away at Quins. Yeah, I think that's decent.
You know, it's a winning... They put in a winning performance, and they lost, and this is why they're a bad team. It's not because they are actually bad. It's because, well, I say they just feel like they're cursed.
But you look at the trajectory of Worcester compared to, say, London Irish, who won early on in the season and they've not shown much else of promise since then. Worcester are improving.
They are improving. I just don't know how those boys do it, you know, because there must be so much uncertainty in that club. It's up for sale. Gary Gall's leaving. And
yeah, you'd be applying for... I saw last week there was a director of rugby position advertised.
Yes, I have. I've sent in a CV.
You sent the CV in? Yeah. I thought you might do.
But, you know, even the Gary Gall appointment seems poor, because a director of rugby isn't a one-year job. You cannot do director of rugby for 1 year. You find a guy, you make him director of rugby for 5 years, because that's what it takes. Ask Dean Ryan, who left, 3 years into his 5-year plan. and then who's in charge? Is it going to be Carl Hogg? Is he going to be around if they appoint a new director of rugby? Will he be the director of rugby? It's just a bit of a mess, actually. And the players deserve a lot of credit for playing as well as they are. It's actually quite a good playing squad.
So despite them still being bottom, they've actually moved, in my mind, up one place, I think. London Irish at the moment are looking like relegation fodder for me.
Agreed.
Unfortunately. Because I like a lot of things about London Irish.
I will say whichever... It's just that fly-off position. You transplant in a Jimmy Gopeth or Danny Cipriani or...
Toby Flood.
Owen Farrell, Alex Lazowski, Toby Flood.
Is available.
You put one of those, I'm not necessarily saying that, but you put one of those guys in either of those teams, and I think they win games like that.
Completely agree with
yesterday.
Yeah. Look at the value that Andy Goode at 35 added to Newcastle when he went there.
Yeah, well, I guess Premiership standard fly halves don't grow on trees.
No.
And that is the problem.
Yeah.
They certainly don't. Anything more from this weekend's games?
Saracens routine pumping of London Irish.
Yeah.
Done.
nothing.
Exeter weren't good. They looked absolutely exhausted on a 5-day turnaround from Montpellier.
I don't buy this one bit.
Squeezed
out.
You don't buy that. Yeah. They trained for 25 minutes in the whole week.
Well, then why are they exhausted?
They travelled on Sunday night, or it might even have been Monday morning, from the south of France. Back to Exeter.
They had a five day break from playing. They're incredibly well.
Which is the minimum amount in a World Cup. That is the minimum amount.
I 100% buy this.
No, I really don't. I mean, if they only train 25 minutes in a week, they're incredibly well drilled. They're professionals. It's their job to play rugby. 5-day turnaround. I'm not saying do it every week, but if it's a one off, it isn't a big deal.
It's not just the physical side of things.
A home game would have been a bit fairer for them.
It would have been fairer. But it isn't just the physical side of things. It is the mental side of things. To get yourself up for such a big game, the Montpellier game in Montpellier, and then repeat it again only a few days later.
Yeah, but do you really think like an extra 12 hours would have helped? Substantially on the mental side?
No. I don't think so. It's not even the 5 days is a thing, but it's any game that they were going to play this weekend. So having it on the Friday makes it worse. But even if they were playing Sunday afternoon, it is draining. It's physically draining, and the extra 2 days off, your bumps and bruises aren't going to go away in that kind of period. You need 2 weeks off or 3 weeks off,
which is what they've got now. They're going away for 10. They're going away for 10 days. I think they've got 10 days themselves to go and sit on a beach and recuperate. Yeah. But Exeter put a massive amount of emphasis on Europe this season because that was one of their targets. They've not performed as they wanted to. Now they're champions of England. They need to step up. So they put so much emphasis on that one performance in Montpellier. And every single one of the coaches and all the players talked about the emotional strain and that took to dig that deep in that game. And I think, as Phil said, they were clearly, you know, running on fumes against Sale, and so to dog it out and win at Sale was the sort of game champions win. Don't play well, still win.
Yeah, and just getting from Exeter to Sale on a Friday is not an easy thing to do.
No, it really isn't.
Other than
getting from Chorlton to Sale on a Friday is
three miles. is not easy.
I could have ran it quicker. That isn't a joke.
Other than JB upsetting Steve Diamond and knocking himself off his Christmas card list. Equally, Craig Maxwell-Keys will not be on Steve Diamond's Christmas list. He was very, very unhappy about a decision at the end of the game, continuing a trend of being very unhappy about decisions at the end of games.
I hate, at any level, whinging about refs. I hate it. Because the only time you should whinge about a ref is if he's been deliberately dishonest, or he's made a mistake, as in, you know, he's literally in the wrong position. No ref wakes up in the morning and goes, I am going to give a bad decision today. They all give decisions that they think are right at that time.
Yeah, based on their viewpoint, based on what they've seen, based on their experience.
And it goes both ways. You've got to grow up. You've got to grow up and say, it just happens. It might not be right, but it happens.
Yeah, 100%.
So I have no time for this.
I thought Rob Baxter, what was really interesting is the chalk and cheese between the two directors of rugby at the AJ Bell Stadium. Steve Diamond, very vocal, and said that the referee had made it up and has basically suggested that he'd given Exeter a penalty because they were because he was taken in by the fact that they were the bigger club and the better
nonsense.
Team.
Nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
I know.
But isn't it just like, such an awful thing to say that? So, presumably...
Question the integrity.
Yeah, so presumably, 8 years ago, Craig Maxwell-Keys would have made the opposite decision because Sale were a bigger club. And when he's making decisions, he's actually thinking of league positions and the size of the team.
I think he might be thinking it's a subconscious thing, but
it's pathetic,
anyway,
guys.
Rob Baxter said, and I thought he was great, he said, well, that decision, you know, yeah, I can understand why Steve Diamond's a little bit frustrated. If he is, that's fine, but I was frustrated a couple of weeks ago in a televised game when Harry Williams was penalised for exactly that. And if you moan about it when it goes against you, you have to hold your hands up when it goes for you, because I just think that these things work themselves out. So
exactly right. Mm-hmm. So hang on, when Harry Williams did it, I assume the referee was making the point that Exeter are the bigger club and therefore penalised Harry Williams. Almost the opposite to Craig Maxwell Keys.
Mm. Well, anyway, I'm with you. I don't like criticism of referees. I wouldn't even be surprised. I don't know if it was bad enough to get censured, but I wouldn't be surprised if we read a little bit more about that. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, and also the referees get a full-on review process every Monday. I mean, they work incredibly hard to make sure that they're as up to speed as they can possibly be.
Well,
don't realise how rigorous it is.
Well, I do understand. I do think the decision, I would have been a little bit frustrated. But I think there's a time and a place to talk about that. Equally, I think that in that Wasps game, you saw you have the TMO. We sometimes complain about how much they get used. And then there was a clear try that could have been checked because it was for a try. And that's the time to definitely go to a TMO if there's a potential try that's been scored and you want to check it. And it wasn't. So, yes, the referees are good and there's some particularly good ones, but there's some room for improvement.
Oh, yeah,
let's be honest about that.
Yeah, I think the stretches for improvement are very impressive. That's the only point I was making, really. Mm. Yeah, good.
So I didn't see a lot of Pro 14 rugby besides Connacht beating Munster and the games we mentioned.
Yeah, Leinster, Ulster.
I'm sure I watched something else as one of the pros as well, but I can't remember. It all merges into one.
Yeah, they're the two ones I've seen.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got a couple of weeks break now. Oh, before we do the Anglo-Welsh Cup and looking ahead, we should update on the Tier 2 tour.
Yes, let's do that.
So, yeah, I mean, there is limited space.
So let me just talk about tickets.
Well, let's just say what it is first, if you're just joining us. Last year we went to Romania to watch a Tier 2 game during the Six Nations, so we could watch some Six Nations in a bar all together and have a good old knees up and then go and watch some of the emerging nations. And we had a really, really amazing time. We're taking it to Spain in March, weekend of the 10th and 11th of March. We're going to Madrid and we're going to go there for Spain versus Germany, which is happening on the Sunday. There's the Six Nations weekend happening that weekend as well. We're going to have a proper time of it. Take it away, Jay.
Yeah, so on the Friday, it looks like there is going to be a game against a Spanish Barbarians team. I don't know where it's kicking off, but it will be as central as possible, and that will be at 8 o'clock. Then there's going to be a day of watching rugby, if you so want to participate.
Oh, you've missed out on there'll be a little invitational game and beers.
Oh, yeah, what they call
obviously
the third half.
The third half.
That is on Friday night.
All welcome.
If you want to catch up with us on Saturday to watch some games, please feel free.
Six Nations matches in O'Neill's.
I think so, yeah.
Famous tapas bar.
Yes. Yeah. And then, 12 o'clock on the Sunday, the fun really happens when we do our live show, followed by cramming all into taxis and going off to Spain versus Germany. World Rugby have provided us with a nice little surprise for you all, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. That's going to be strictly secret until we get there.
Potentially some amazing surprises.
Yes. Mm. I mean, if just one of the things comes off, which we are hoping it will do, it'll be very memorable. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And then we're going to finish off, as we do on most Sundays, when we're away, by getting very, very drunk.
Absolutely.
It's gonna be good fun. We've filled out our current venue. So when in Romania, we got 100. So I thought I'll just get another venue for 100. That sold out within 45 minutes. So I've moved the venue. So we've got a slightly bigger venue now. That's going to hold, I think, 100 extra. So I'm going to be releasing those tickets. So if you've emailed me and you want to know where those tickets are, they'll be available probably as of tonight, or you'll be listening to this in the morning. So yeah, by the time you're listening to this, they will be available. I would recommend that you get them fairly quickish.
Yeah, so just bag yourself some flights to Madrid. You can get them really cheaply from all over the United Kingdom and Ireland. As JB mentions, already over 100 people are going to be coming along for the crack. And yeah, Six Nations rugby, sunshine, and some tier two rugby, which we're going to support. Mm. And come along and join us. And yeah, like you say, via our Facebook page, Egg Chasers, you can find us there. Keep an eye on Twitter and stuff. But yeah, we're ticketing it. Some of those proceeds will be piled into beer, into games, into...
For the record, none of my proceeds will go to any of your beer. None.
And also, just to make the logistical nightmare that it has happened, but we're so excited about it. So yeah,
these things are so ridiculously hard to organise. You would not believe. If you want tickets, go on.
I did lose sleep over it last time around, but it was so worth it.
If you want tickets, go on our Facebook group is the best way to do it. There is a link there. If not, should we pin it to the Twitter feed?
Yeah, we'll pin it to tweets. We'll pin it to Twitter. Yeah, it's going to be really, really good. So if you want to email with any questions or you need some help, contact eggchasers@gmail.com.
Perfect. All right, Anglo-Welsh Cup.
Yes.
Should we actually skip the Anglo-Welsh Cup and just talk about the players in the Anglo-Welsh Cup?
Yeah, I think so, because who knows and who really cares what the results are in some respects. I think it's quite a good one to watch from almost a neutral perspective and just enjoy the fact that we're going to see some names we haven't heard before that are going to have breakthrough seasons. For example, Sam Simmons had a breakthrough year in the Anglo-Welsh Cup for Exeter Chiefs last season.
Mm. So, my breakthrough player...
Go on.
I think he's got dispensations to play. Is going to be for Sale Sharks. Obvs.
Standard.
And it's going to be Cameron Redpath, son of Brian Redpath, and one of the most highly rated youngsters in the country.
What position?
Fly half or centre, I understand.
Sale had about half of the England under-18s squad. It was either out of the 23-man squad, they had something like 13 or 14 of the players. Wow. Or it's out of the 30-man squad, they had 18 or 60. Whatever it was, they had an incredible proportion of the young players turning out for England. I think it was at under-18 level. So, yeah, there's good things going on in that Sale Academy.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Neil Briggs doing a very good job there.
My one to watch, I hope he gets some game time for Saracens, Max Mullins.
Fly half.
Can play elsewhere in the back line. I think for England under-20s when they won the World Cup in the Harry Mallinder year, he was centre or wing even potentially.
Yeah, you do tend to find that the fly half is just basically the best player that they've got and can play pretty much anywhere.
But he looked really, really good. And also Harlequins have got some seriously good young players. Sam Aspland Robinson's a great winger. Dino Lamcona is a good back row player.
sounds like a
curry dish. And there was another guy, Gabriel Aber. I can't remember what his name is. Ibitoi.
Yeah.
Some seriously good young players Quins have got. So, yeah.
Phil, do you have a breakthrough player?
Not right now.
Okay.
Maybe.
Who is Zach Mercer?
Yeah.
So he captained Bath in last year's Anglo-Welsh Cup. So that's what we mean. These guys that are now in the England squad, only a year ago,
I think the Currys
were relative unknowns.
Had their debut in the Anglo-Welsh.
It is interesting, the England squad that they've got. So it should be a 32-man squad, but you've got 34 guys in there with Marcus Smith.
Yeah.
Madrick Marcus and Zach Mercer being apprentice players.
Is Zach Mercer really that far behind Sam Simmons?
Or Underhill?
Yeah, it doesn't feel
like
he is.
I mean, like they both started in the back row today.
Yeah, so it's interesting on that.
Yeah. I would say no. I don't think so. Or behind that far behind Tom Curry.
Oh,
certainly
yeah,
not.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, so actually, last year was a bit of a vintage year for Anglo-Welsh in terms of talent spotted.
Yeah.
It happens every year.
Yeah, but
Nick Izikwe was last season as well.
Was he?
Yeah.
I reckon this might be a record, right? So if there's Nick Izikwe, there's the Currys, and there's Simmons. I can't remember a year previous, if that makes sense, where you had three guys appear in the Anglo-Welsh and then three guys end up in the EPS.
England squad. Yeah.
That is it. That's special. That is pretty good.
Mm.
We're going to do a game of the week. Are we going to preview all the pro?
There's one more thing I've completely forgot to mention when we were talking about international squads, and it will be the culmination of an amazing, one of the greatest rugby stories in the Italy squad.
Yes. What's his name?
Ian McKinley. I mean, I'm very much willing to ignore the fact he's qualifying by living in a country for 3 years on this occasion.
You're so hypocritical, Tim.
Well, I'm taking in with the sentimental side of this story.
It's a brilliant story.
It is an incredible story. There's a good bit on the World Rugby website, actually. A great video all about this story. It's well worth checking out.
That's a rugby dungeon guy, if ever I've heard of one.
Have a search for it. So, blinded in one eye, Leinster Academy graduate, thought he would never play again. He's gradually managed to not only start playing, but then start playing well. Had some specially modified goggles that initially prevented him from being allowed to play at all, but he's since been allowed to play and has been getting better and better and better, playing in Italy, and will make, hopefully, touch wood, his international test debut in the autumn internationals.
Yeah, good for you, fella.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
There was one other story, which you forgot to mention, which is, it's not a big story, I guess. £450 million been spent by the RFU.
Yeah.
So, earlier on this week, the RFU announced...
That's quite a lot of money. I know Phil's the stat man, but I will fill you in on that stat. £450 million is quite a lot of cash.
It is, but it's a 30% increase to previous, which again is a lot, but it's not that much. As in, if it was an additional 443 million, that would be ludicrous. But the 30% increase is still a lot of money.
Yeah, it's like 75. It's like 75 salary caps, something like that. So, this is great news. It did amaze me on Twitter the amount of apathy for it, though. It's like, oh well, couldn't we just give some to Samoa? No, you can't. Or it'll just be wasted on Blazers. No, it won't, because from what I understand, it's all basically going into plastic pitchers.
There's a chunk of it going to be in that. It's
the 50 plus plastic pitchers. When you work it out, that's pretty much a lot of the spend.
Well, it's going on to 17 seven-a-side contract for the women's game. Yeah, 60 RFU-owned artificial pitches.
Now, I've never used... someone on Twitter said, what's the point in having a plastic pitch when you can have eight pitches and rotate them? Because you can't have eight sets of floodlights. if anyone uses one of these things, they are absolutely brilliant. They have completely transformed how we train at OCH. Numbers go through the roof.
Yeah, it makes training so much better.
Oh, it's brilliant. It is so good. And if they can replicate that up and down the country, it can only be a good thing. And you can use them just continually. They're absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And the RFU get nowhere near enough credit for how good they are at grassroots. I think everyone concentrates on the England team and the idiots of the world like Rob Andrew. Whereas
they're not that. Oh no, I was going to make a really bad grassroots versus plastic grass.
But actually, the grassroots level, they're awesome. If you need something from the RFU, someone shows up in a one series BM with some tackle shields, and they always help you out. So it's good. Well done, RFU.
Yes.
So some of that 443 million is clearly going on one series BMW leases.
Yeah.
BMWs and Minis, they normally
drive. The Minis are horrible that they drive. But the one series is are quite nice. And there's the occasional truck as well. It's that Mitsubishi truck. In fact, Mitsubishi is one of the sponsors. So that will be why there's so many Mitsubishi trucks.
And meanwhile, Samoa might be declaring bankruptcy.
What, seriously? Is that an actual story? Have you made that up?
That might be happening.
So if you're given money and you have no expenditure, how do you go bankrupt?
Yeah, that's the problem. They have a lot of expenditure.
On what?
First class flights.
Yeah.
For certain members of the Tory party.
Yeah, let's not... Yeah,
Five-star hotel rooms for certain members of the Tory party.
Yeah, exactly. Let's not get too sympathetic until we find out exactly where that money goes, hey? So, there you go.
Right, we've got over Leo Vegas pick of the week.
Of course.
Which is?
Omar Sambor's.
Oh, I forgot what one more player to watch. Ben Earl for Saracens.
Oh, is that Nathan Earl's brother?
Nathan Earl's brother.
Nathan Earl finished a couple of brilliant tries at the weekend.
Did he? Damn it, I didn't pick him. I've got Adam on the bench in my fantasy rugby draft team.
Yeah, he was on the bench. He's got a lot of points from the bench, though.
Right, my soundboard's down, so you're just going to have to go into pick of the week.
Right, so our Leo Vegas pick of the week. One game from this weekend's upcoming matches is... When's the international autumn international start?
So we are actually in about to start week three of the autumn internationals. So week one was
Bledisloe 3.
Week two, we had Australia versus Barbars. Yeah. Japan played a World 15 and lost to the World 15.
Yeah, it's a World 15 though, mate.
It's a whole world. It's a whole yeah. world.
Come on.
Japan.
True.
Come on.
And the Classic Wallabies played the Barbarians.
What's a Classic Wallaby?
Wallaby Old Boys.
Oh, awesome. But so
there was a range. So Drew Mitchell, for example, who has only just finished playing, like...
Me and Drew had a fallout
3 months ago.
The other day. An actual fallout over Twitter.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, over those shirts.
Over what?
Over the Australia shirts.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Your ignorance about the indigenous Australian population, JB.
I'm not ignorant about them. I'm aware that they exist.
So, week three, there are actually three games this weekend as well. Canada hosts the Maori All Blacks in Vancouver. Japan
one-way traffic, that one.
Japan play Australia.
One-way traffic, that one.
Yeah. And Barbarians play New Zealand at Twickenham.
One-way traffic, that one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, there's no Premiership, but there are two Northern Hemisphere leagues that have games, and the top 14 have a full fixture list, of course, because it's not...
All home wins.
It's not the it's not the 2 weeks in summer where they get their rest, their deloading week and then pre-season week and then they're back into it.
Yeah. I reckon if you just took a little bit of money on Leo Vegas and just always backed French home teams on some kind of spread betting scenario, you'd probably come out at the end of the season relatively well off.
But the odds massively favour the home team. Yeah.
But Leon, right? Leon have won four home games this season, away games, which is as many away games as they won all of last season.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
All you need to do is win a few away games and you can win the top 14.
Yeah. There is also, interestingly, a full fixture list for the Guinness Pro 14.
Yes.
Albeit, I assume that most of the internationals, or certainly most of the current internationals, so Saibun, Zeebo excluded, will not be playing.
Yeah, Glasgow didn't tweet it. A Glasgow fan tweeted it. Of all the players that they're missing, you can just about make up a 15.
Yeah, they'll just about get a 23.
Nico Matawalo, or whatever his name is, at fullback.
Fullback and scrum half.
And scrum half, yeah.
He is fast. So, the fixture list, I'll rattle through them all, and then we can focus a little bit on the game of the week. So, let's do this from back to front. So, 7:35 on Saturday... Connacht host Cheetahs, which should be a good game.
Connacht off the back of beating Munster, I'll go for Cheetahs. Doubling up.
Yeah, I'm going to go for Connacht as well. Then Cardiff host Zebre.
Cardiff, reluctantly.
I'm going to go a Zebre win.
Zebre away win in Cardiff.
No.
Then Edinburgh host Ospreys.
I
think Ospreys on this
Edinburgh.
One.
Yeah. Ospreys got a win. Are they on back-to-back wins though? No, it's Heineken Cup.
I miss Cockers.
He's got his hands seriously full at the moment though.
He does. There's a few disciplinary issues.
And who better to have disciplining people than Cockers?
Then Ulster play the Southern Kings in Port Elizabeth.
Ulster.
Scarlets host Benetton. Scarlets.
Yep. Scarlets.
Munster host Dragons.
Munster.
Yep.
And then we've got a repeat of the game from a couple of weeks ago in Scotstoun, where Glasgow host Leinster.
Ooh. It's going to be Leinster with the second string.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, Glasgow are just are missing. So it is they'll both be second strings, but Glasgow's second string is threadbare.
So Cheetahs will be winning because I don't think they lose anyone to international court call-ups.
This is the farce of it. Leinster versus Glasgow should be a box office matchup, and we're gonna.
Mate.
It's fine if it's like we accept it. It's the Anglo-Welsh tournament. The first teams are all off having a couple of weeks break. We're going to get to see the young guys, and we embrace it for what it is. But this is a top two team Pro 14 matchup. Yeah, shorn of two full teams of internationals.
It's not really good enough, is it?
Yeah.
And you know, I guess the Premiership will have the same criticism when it comes to...
It won't, because the England squads are spread between 12 teams.
Yes, and that's another very good point.
So the most... Bath have got six England players, or eight internationals. Saracens have got nine. Yeah. They're the two most.
Yeah. And whereas Glasgow, or basically the whole Scotland team.
Glasgow and Leinster, they will be 30 players in
Pro 14 shouldn't exist during in international windows.
No, even more so.
Do you know what? I'm going to say, I think this is the best season of Pro 14 rugby I think they might have ever had.
With the Italian teams being competitive.
Yeah.
And Cheetahs really adding to the competition.
Cheetahs have added. I actually really like the new format. Every game seems relevant. So they've actually, I think, what I thought was a terrible idea has been executed rather brilliantly. And it's going well. But then you've still got these annoying...
You make little mistakes like this.
Yeah. And when the IRFU welfare policy kicks in and ruins everything. I mean, that's annoying too.
So there you go. There's the games for next week.
Right.
So we're all saying Leinster win.
That's our Leo Vegas game of the week. They've got some great betting offers. They sponsor us, so they know their rugby. And you should go and check them out, leovegas.com, Leinster away.
Cool. Mm. Right, let's stop it now, because then we can get out of here before it goes to 1 hour 35.
Yes, we can.
Okay. So
thank you for listening. Get involved in the Tier 2 Tour. Find out information on Facebook. Leave your review on the Apple Podcast Store. Tell your mates. And let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.